And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky and our good friend Rhett Lewis back with us. Nice. Rhett, how you doing, bud?
Oh, man, it's good. It's good to be back with you guys. I feel like draft season isn't official until I can find my way onto the pod. So glad to kick things off here with you.
Well, wait, because there's been some news that has happened since you've been back on the pod. We got to talk about this basketball thing in Indiana basketball. I know you guys are Hoosiers.
This is big.
You're trying to run it back, I guess, circa day 1976.
81
or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Mike Woodson coming back. How do you feel about, like, kind of copying your rivals, Michigan, and going into the pro ranks to get it, your next basketball coach? What's that like?
Well, here's what I'll say, DJ. We need all the help we can get based on what's happened here for the last 4 or 5 years. When you don't make the tournament in Indiana in 4 straight years, it's an issue. But I think Scott Dolson, the AD, put together a terrific model, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, it is similar to what Michigan did, but bringing Mike Woodson, relating the fan base back to the glory days with Mike, and then bringing in a high pedigree college basketball voice in Thad Matta as the associate athletic director for basketball only. I mean, it's a win-win to me. I mean, like, we get solid pedigree there, the college basketball world, and then you bring Indiana basketball back to the tradition with Woody. I mean, it's a win.
It's been a long time. Like at least during the Crean years, I would watch, and I'd be texting Rhett during games, like, engaged. I haven't watched an Indiana basketball game in 3 years. Yeah. Like, I haven't texted Rhett anything because I'm like, they're terrible.
Does that mean I'm gonna see the candy cane warm ups? Am I gonna see that all over again, or are we gonna move?
Did it ever go away?
Are we gonna move to the modern era? I just wonder, like.
How are you doing, Buck? I mean,
I don't know. I mean, I
with
feel
Roy
like
gone, what's okay?
I don't know. This
who's
is
getting
weird.
That job?
You know, your guess is as good as mine, because on the bench is just Hubert Davis, who was a classmate. Steve Robson, those guys have been around forever. There is a guy who played in the program, Wes Miller, who I think is at UNCG, who is a good coach. He has that program up and on the rise, but I don't know. This is a hard one. Last time we stayed in the family, we did the Matt Doherty thing, and that didn't go so well. It's a hard hustle. I don't know, man. And Carolina fans are a little snooty when it comes to, like, who we want on the sideline. So this is a hard one. I don't know.
By the way, everybody tuning in today, I mean, we're in the hardest draft
season.
They're
just loving
this. And they're just loving us talking about IU and UNC hoops.
It is what it is.
Blue Bloods, baby. Blue Bloods.
I know. We need, golly. By the way, we're going to get to our football stuff here in a minute, which we've got some interesting quarterback conversation about what should take place in the draft. We're going to look back on some of these pro days. A couple other things we want to definitely hit. Maybe some guys that have moved up or down. I want to talk about multiple sport thing as well. But I do want to add just one thing. If anybody ever wants to question my San Diego Padre fandom, just realize that according to Twitter, it was the greatest college basketball game of all time the other night with Gonzaga and UCLA. Oh,
and you're
I was watching. I was watching Game 3 between the Diamondbacks and the Padres. So I did not see one bounce of a ball in that game. So don't ever question my fandom.
And it was such a good game. Like, it was such a good game. Like, I know March Madness and those things, but UCLA, Gonzaga was such a good game. Mickey Cronin has done a great job with the Bruins. They play hard. You know, it's hard for me because I'm watching it, and my son went to school with Jules Bernard at Windward, and Johnny Juzang is a local hero. He played at Harvard Westlake. And so to watch these guys that you kind of follow since they were kids play at a high level was terrific. And then Gonzaga and the shot, I mean, bananas.
Yeah, we're going to get to a little bit of that connection with the football world here in just a little bit. And not just because everybody knows Suggs played football, but we've got a little another conversation we want to get to. But hey, before we get there, a couple quarterback things I wanted to start with. And let's work our way down the board a little bit. And Buck, I'll get your thought on this one first. Sam Darnold, right? Sam Darnold looked like San Francisco could be an option there. San Francisco makes the move up the board, so they're out. So you've got, really, to me, the two main suitors seem to be Carolina and Denver. Those are the two. And so when you look at the compensation of what you could get, what you would take, I think it's kind of fascinating because those two teams are kind of, I would say, almost kind of in a weird spot because with the Niners trading up, you figure they were going to take a quarterback. But the fact that the talk is they're going to take Mac Jones, I think now if you're Carolina and Denver, you sit there and look at it and say, maybe there's a chance, you know, Fields or Lance could get down to us. So do we make a Sam Darnold move now? Do we try and hold off and see how the draft plays out? But it got to me the interesting conversation of what would you take if you were the Jets? Because I saw some people mention, you know, maybe you get a third round pick or this, that, and the other. I'm sitting here thinking, well, if Sam Darnold even signs for backup money, quarterback money is so high, even if he signs for backup money after he were to walk, your comp pick's going to be a three on that. So to me, if you're going to get a two, you do the trade. If you're not getting a two, you're better off holding on to him, in my opinion. Buck, what do you think?
I agree with you, DJ. I think at some point what you have to do is you have to look at the situation. And if you don't get what you want in return in terms of draft compensation, I think what you do is you almost recreate a Drew Brees, Phillip Rivers situation. Because I think if you look at Sam Darnold, who knows what competition will do for him in terms of upping his game. We can talk about the new system and all those other things, but we know back at SC he had to compete and earned the job at SC, and he ended up playing at a high level. So now you drop in a young quarterback. Let's just say Zach Wilson shows up. Who's to say that Sam Darnold is going to concede the starting quarterback position for him? If you're the Jets and you get a better version of Sam Darnold, it then works in your favor. You talk about the comp pick and all those other things, but you get better performance for the quarterback position. That's what you want. And then you make a decision at that point. I think we talked about, could they get back a number one pick or a number two pick? And it doesn't seem like that is the play. I think right now you keep them, you draft the other quarterback, and you continue to proceed because it certainly isn't cost prohibitive at this point.
What do you think, Rip?
Yeah, you know, so you're saying if you don't get the two or something better than a three, hang on to him for this entire season, essentially. Like going forward, and until his contract would expire, and then you could let him go out on the market, get a deal, and then get the contract in return.
You could tag him and trade him if you had to at that point in time. Like, to me, there's higher, you take on some more risk, right? So, you know, what's the absolute worst case scenario is he, you know, you turn down, say you turn down a three, which I would not accept a three. If you turn down a three and then Sam comes back and plays terrible and then just tanks his value, and then he signs somewhere, even if he signs somewhere for lower tier backup money, you're going to get some type of a comp pick. But the upside is if he comes back with a better supporting cast, with a better system, better play caller, and plays well, now you're in a situation, well, heck, we're going to get a lot more than a two. We're going to be able to trade him, tag him, and trade him for a one and something else. He's going to be a 20. At that time, he'll be a 24-year-old quarterback. So you could even if you wanted to move forward with him, you could do and slow play the thing with Zach. So, I mean, to me, it just doesn't make any sense. If they were, I would never trade him for a third round pick. No chance. It's not he's more of an asset to keep him at that point in time.
Yeah. You know, I think it's interesting because if the 49ers were so interested, it does make you wonder a little bit like how much Mike LaFleur is interested. You know, like knowing that that Shanahan, you know, eyes that type of quarterback.
Staff, I think the coaching staff would love to keep Sam Darnold. I think when you're coaching staff, you're saying, that gives me two options here. We've got him. We know what Sam can do, and we think he really fits what we do. You might think Zach Wilson has a higher ceiling, and you're really excited about him, but shoot, there's a lot worse things than to go in there with both quarterbacks.
And he doesn't strike me as the guy, Bucky, the type of guy that, like, you know, will sour and poison the locker room if he's not starting. You know what I mean? He's a good kid, and we learned that, you know, in this process coming out.
Yeah, and I think it's actually good for him. I mean, because if you really look at it, because like the leverage could flip back in Sam Darnold's favor if this plays out, if he stays in New York and he plays really well. Because right now, statistically, it is hard to say, hey, let's put the leverage in the team's favor in terms of like the deal, like, oh, we're holding firm on a one or a two because the numbers and the performance hasn't been where you say, oh yeah, absolutely, we give up the first. But if he balls out, now it puts him in a tricky situation because not only does he get the franchise tag, but now in a trade scenario, maybe he gets to dictate where he wants to go as opposed to, oh, I just show up somewhere, whatever. And so to me, I think it could be a win-win scenario for both the Jets and for Darnold if he comes back and he plays well and they get it. And I mean, who knows? Like, just because you draft a quarterback, I know we draft him, how you got to play him. You got to play that quarterback at some point. But I think you have to be sensible and say, this system is supposed to be a system that can elevate his game. Let's see what it looks like.
Right.
Right. You just, at the end of the day, you can't – if he's a, he's a good kid, right? He's a great worker. Mm-hmm. He's really loved by his teammates. He's 23 years old. You can't give him away. Like, you just, you can't. You haven't – you're sitting on an asset. Now, the other thing you have to consider, which we haven't talked about, was remember the Sam Bradford trade? You get into training camp. You have an injury. And all of a sudden now, you know, your suitors change of who's, you know, who's interested. Yeah. So you got
and
that
so does the price tag.
Absolutely.
You know,
and the other thing real quick, Buck, is if you're Denver and Carolina, right? Carolina 8, Denver 9, and you're kind of in that limbo land, like, are we going to get a shot at one of these top quarterbacks? I've got a mock draft coming out tomorrow, and I won't spoil it, but I mean, I think we could have five can go in the first seven picks. And when you think about pick 7 with Detroit, which I want to get to that next. It's a trade spot where teams could trade up ahead of 8 and 9 for a quarterback. But I mean, I'll just get to you on this, Buck. The more I looked at it, the more I think about it, I'm like, is Jared Goff going to keep me from drafting Justin Fields if he's there and I'm the Detroit Lions? I don't think so. I think I'd take Justin Fields if he was there. I would.
Yeah. I think Justin Fields has more upside as a player. But if I'm the Detroit Lions, when I look at my roster, are we at a point where we can benefit from the rookie and the rookie contract right now with this team? Because you want to have the benefit of being able to build up the team while the quarterback position is really cheap. And are they 2 years away, 3 years away, or whatever? And so do we take the hit with Jared Goff basically taking all the L's while we're building up the auxiliary parts of the team? And then in year 2 or year 3 of the rebuild, drop the young quarterback in so we can benefit from that 5-year run at that point. I think a lot of it depends on internally. How do they view Jared Goff and how they expect him to play in this system under Anthony Lynn?
Well, yeah. If you think about it, Rhett, this is Brad Holmes coming from the Rams. Obviously, he was on the other end of it, right? They were there. They drafted Jared Goff. He traded for Jared Goff, but it wasn't a Jared Goff for Matthew Stafford straight up now.
Yeah, so that's what I was saying. There's so much extra value involved here with Detroit, right? With the additional first-round picks that they got from Jared Goff. I kind of feel like you can afford to make this pick as a quarterback at number 7. And here's the thing. Like, Brad Holmes knows everything there is to know about Jared Goff. They know where he can win. They know how they can win with him. They know, you know, where his, you know, his shortcomings are. And then you look at Anthony Lynn and DJ, we've talked about this, you know, quite a bit from your time, you know, covering him with the 49 with the Chargers, rather on the Chargers radio broadcast. Like, he wants a quarterback that's not going to turn the ball over a bunch, right? He wants a quarterback. You know, we talked about why Tyrod Taylor was starting in place of Justin Herbert. Like, I don't know. I think Justin Fields kind of fits that bill for Anthony Lynn. Guy with some real mobility. Mm-hmm.
Covers up the sins of your offensive line.
Yeah.
We saw that with Herbert last year. Herbert was the most pressured quarterback in the league and was a rookie of the year.
I mean, we can go even back. Like, let's not even use Justin Herbert, because I would say Justin Herbert is the high end of it. But let's go to Buffalo and look at what he did with Tyrod Taylor. When he had the opportunity to call plays at the end of his run during the Buffalo Bills, he was able to win successfully with Tyrod Taylor operating as a quarterback. So he certainly can do it with an athletic quarterback. He also has shown that this system, and he can have success with maybe not an A-level quarterback, which is what I would say to Jared Goff is. I think internally, it depends on how Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes view Jared Goff, and also Mark Brunell and all these guys that are kind of vested in the reclamation project that is Jared Goff and this Detroit Lions team. What do they believe is going to be the best option for this team to get up and running?
And again, they're sitting there on 6-year deals. Not to say that is, you know, Campbell and Holmes.
Like, that helps.
I mean, that's a long time. So you can, you can take a couple swings and misses as it relates. And I think for Brad Holmes, a lot of this depends on his college scouting expertise in terms of knowing, okay, what quarterbacks are in the 2022 class? What quarterbacks potentially could be in the 2023 class? Because what I think you need to do is weigh not only Jared Goff versus those classes, okay, but how does Justin Fields look versus the guys that are coming next year and the year after? Because if he is head and shoulders above what could be available in the next 2 years, and we can't completely forecast because someone always comes out of the back of the pack to emerge – But you do try to use your expertise to say, hey, you know what? Next year is Sam Howell and these other guys. Like, maybe we do need to make the move on the quarterback now because we may not get an A-level guy in the next draft.
And I think, DJ, it's also like, who would they – you know, who are they thinking about outside of Justin Fields? Like, is it Justin Fields versus Ja'Marr Chase? Is he still there? Is it Justin Fields, like, by the grace of God versus Kyle Pitts? Like, is he still there? You know, like, how much does that change the thinking for the quarterback if you have one of those, you know, rare elite playmakers still sitting there at seven as well?
My thing is, if you think Justin Fields is a special, special talent, Jared Goff's presence is not going to stop me from taking Justin Fields. And
that's the moral of the story.
You got to remember who else is, you know, who's in Detroit, right? John Dorsey. John Dorsey was in Green Bay when they drafted Aaron Rodgers when Brett was there. He was in Kansas City when they drafted Mahomes, even though they were winning a lot of games with Alex Smith. He has realized that if you can get an elite player, it's all about margins, right? You're trying to increase margins. Well, if you get this much better, you know, at the quarterback position, it's going to make a big impact. You can get this much better at tight end or wide receiver, it's not going to have as much of an impact. I mean, if you could just get better, just that margin at the quarterback position. Mm-hmm. And while we think Jared Goff is a winning player and can be a winning player, mm-hmm. there's the ceiling between Jared Goff and Justin Fields. There's a reason why the Rams wanted more and made that trade. That's just what I'm getting at.
No, I absolutely believe it. DJ, you know, I think it's funny because we're having to completely change the way that we view the quarterback position, right? I would say that for so long, the quarterback was the endangered species, meaning once we got the quarterback and got him signed, we never thought about upgrading the position until like 10 years in, like, okay, well, maybe we need to move. Now what we're seeing, and maybe it's a product of a younger set of general managers coming in, these guys are just commodities, just like position players. And even though sometimes the money looks funny because you're not used to having dead cap expenditures of 30 million plus, teams are like, yeah, I want better. And so it's almost like going back to when we got in the scouting business, we talked about that high standard. That the standard at the position is, hey, man, I want a Marino, I want an Elway, I want a Jim Kelly. I want someone that I can envision not only hoisting the Super Bowl trophy, but a gold jacket type guy. And if I don't have that guy, I am always hunting for that player. That is different than the way that we've seen it maybe the last 10 years when teams were re-signing guys who we knew were just guys.
Let me ask you one other potential scenario, DJ. Let's say that four quarterbacks are gone by the time the Lions are on the clock at seven. What would you consider from the Denver Broncos if they're trying to jump the Carolina Panthers to get into number seven to take that last quarterback?
I mean, they're in the catbird seat because they're going to get the absolute dream scenario, which is two desperate teams for a quarterback that pick right behind you. So not only am I going to have a bidding war between two teams, I'm still going to more than likely get the player I would have picked if I wasn't going to take a quarterback at seven. I'm going to get the same guy at eight or nine. What I'm getting to is that Detroit is picking at seven. It makes no sense. If they take a quarterback, I get it. If they're not going to take a quarterback, it makes zero sense for them to stick. Because I would think at worst, you could just call Carolina and say, hey, give me a three and you can come up one spot, take your quarterback, and we're good.
Yeah, just flipping spots. Yeah, because
that'll be fun.
The team in this that I think has probably more of the desperation, I think the Carolina Panthers are more desperate than the Denver Broncos. I think the Denver Broncos, even though George Patton comes over, he's the new general manager, I think he could be like, you know, like, okay, like we want to upgrade, but how much do we want to mortgage the future to upgrade? I think the Carolina Panthers are basically, they kind of boxed themselves.
They've been in on everybody.
They boxed themselves into a corner where they're going to get a quarterback some way, shape, or form. And so I think they're the team with the owner saying, hey, man, I don't care. Give up whatever we have to give up so we can get the guy that we want. And if one of those guys, Trey Lance or Justin Fields, is sitting right there within range, I expect them to make the move.
The question then is, does Detroit want to play or does Detroit want to stick and pick the quarterback? That to me is what gets fascinating. Because the other thing I'm thinking of, you know what I'm – hey, this is how the phone call could go. Hey, Brad. Yeah, hey, it's Matt Rule, Scott Fitterer here. We want to just move up one spot. You know, you're not taking a quarterback. We'll flip you a three. Brad can say, I'm not doing it. Oh, we'll flip you a two. Not doing it. I'm going to stick and pick. Oh, okay. Well, who are you taking? Well, I'll tell you what I'm taking. I'm taking Justin Fields. By the way, what will you give me for Jared Goff? You don't have a quarterback. I mean, that's literally like, not only am I not trading with you, you're going to have to trade me something to get Jared Goff now because I just took your quarterback.
I mean, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I mean, you would take Jared Goff over what they have in Carolina. I'd take Jared Goff over Teddy Bridgewater. He's an upgrade.
Man, so poor Jared Goff. Like, he's over there shopping for houses, and you're already trying to have him move from Detroit to Charlotte. I'm just saying, like,
is that crazy? Poor, that's not crazy.
It's not crazy, but poor him, man. He's, like, maybe she's in an apartment.
Yeah. You're still in the rental market right now, I think.
I don't rule anything out.
Settle down a bit. Yeah.
I don't rule anything out. I think that trade that Jared Goff was a good, you know, they're happy about Jared Goff, but that trade was about getting ones, you know, that was about trading Matt Stafford and getting ones.
Yeah. And who's to say that the Miami Dolphins aren't interested in popping back a slot or two as well? They're sitting at number six, you know, like they've been moving all around. Like,
I know, but
they seem hell bent on getting one of those two guys.
They have their eyes on somebody, and I don't know who that somebody is. I don't know if it's the wide receiver or if it's Kyle Pitts, but it seems like they have their eyes on someone.
If we
see them moving again. Yeah.
If we have quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, 4, Bengals stick and pick at 5, somebody wants to get your quarterback at 6. Like,
ooh.
You know.
That's desperate. Yeah, that's a lot right there.
We'll see. It's just a thought.
All man, right. If five quarterbacks, DJ, if five quarterbacks go within the top 7, like, I like the quarterback class. I do like the quarterback class.
But
if five quarterbacks happen to go within the first 7 picks, I think my brain will explode in terms of just all of it.
Have you guys, quick sidebar here, have we loosened on the Bengals taking an offensive lineman stranglehold here at number 5? Has that started to loosen up here a little bit?
I don't have them taking an offensive lineman in my mock draft that comes out tomorrow, so put it that way. I've been told by people that you have to, that, you know, if you have a gun to your head, you have to take an offensive lineman.
Yeah.
And I've also had it confirmed. I wasn't sure, but I did have it confirmed. The draft, let me look. It does go beyond the first round this year. They're actually going to have seven rounds.
Whoa,
can actually pick offensive linemen in other places in the draft. It's allowed.
So, wait a minute. So you think the Bengals potentially could take a playmaker instead of a protector?
It's, you know, philosophy thing. Like, what does Duke Tobin think?
I mean,
you know, like,
just, I mean, Mike Brown, you as an organization, they need interior offensive linemen. They do. I mean, that you took Jonah Williams with the 12th pick to play left tackle, and he played okay. He wasn't bad. I mean, you believed in him. If you don't trust your evaluation, you just took a left tackle with the 12th pick. I can get interior linemen in the second, third round. They're going to upgrade what they've been playing with. Riley Reiff's a placeholder as a right tackle, but at least he gets me through a year. But they need interior guys. In my opinion, I'm gonna draft Penei Sewell and ask him to play right on the right side. And, I mean, I don't see that.
So they're gonna draft another weapon to go with Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, and so we're saying a wide receiver or maybe a pass catcher down the middle.
That's
of the
Kyle
field.
Pitts
so,
to me.
So man. Kyle Pitts goes to Cincinnati as opposed to Jamar Chase. Like, that's what we're thinking. It's one of those things. Someone to control.
I feel like I'm giving away my whole mock draft here.
I don't know what your mock draft is, but you just have blown my mind. I'm like, what? The Bengals gonna pick a playmaker?
Yeah, I'll do it.
Wow. I just have visions of John Ross, who I liked all over again. They picked John Ross in the top 10. I mean,
Hold on, Buck. I don't have an alarm bell to ring, but to have John Ross's name mentioned within about 2 seconds of Kyle Pitts's name, the alarm bells in my head have just exploded.
Well, they have to explode. He was a top 10 pick.
He wasn't a top 10 player. Buck, you've been doing this. We've been doing this together. Maybe a little bit before me.
I have
20 years. How many tight ends have you seen better than this kid?
But here's what I would say about that, right? When I look at the Pro Bowl caliber tight ends, George Kittle, Travis Kelce, Darren Waller, all drafted 5th round or lower. I haven't seen a 1st round tight end come and dominate like we've expected. Particularly T.J. Hockenson, good player, not a great player. Eric Ebron did not live up to the hype as a top 10 player. I mean, I love O.J. Howard. He hasn't been – like, we haven't seen one of those guys that we've expressed or said, hey, this is a generational talent at the tight end position that's going to dominate when they walked in. And I like Alphys, and I like what he does. But
he's
I don't
all look, those dudes.
But, no, it's not only him. It's the guy who's designing plays for him, because that's who you also have to scout. How many guys know how to unlock the tight end? I don't believe every offensive coordinator in the league knows how to unlock or utilize a guy that is like Kyle Pitts. And so I don't know. So I'm a little lower on Kyle Pitts in terms of what he would do coming into the league than others, because I just don't know if someone knows how to play with him correctly as a video game.
Here's the good news, though, Rhett. The good news is if you have a coach who's not smart enough to know how to feature him as a tight end, just play him a receiver. He'd be better than anybody.
He's better
than T. Higgins.
I'd take him at number five, even if he never puts his hand in the dirt.
Oh, my gosh. So
Buck, he played the best corners in the best conference, and he cooked them all. He cooked all of them.
He did.
All right.
But it's a good discussion, because I am the lone wolf when it comes to descending. I think he's super talented. I like what he does, getting in space and all that. He's a jumbo wide receiver. We have seen that position have success, but we've also seen people find those difference makers in later rounds. And so if we talk about marquee positions in team building, DJ, that's never been the position that we talked about. Hey, the pillar of our team is tight end. Like, we've never
I'm not going to mention any names because this got sideways, but what if a certain particular someone wasn't popping wheelies on his motorcycle in a mini mall parking lot? Do you think we'd be having this conversation?
I don't know. Who's popping wheelies in a mini mall?
Remember K2? You remember how good K2 was coming out of Miami?
Oh, okay.
He decided he wanted to be Evel Knievel on a motorcycle.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
There's some other
He was the best.
I didn't have to grade him. And obviously.
No. Like all stuff.
But coming out. He was unbelievable.
He was. And Jeremy Shockey was that value. But, man, like, think back. You know, a year like that's. Early 2000s, like that's a long time ago.
That's why with like this guy, I'm like he's just different, man. Like sometimes it's like, hey, I don't want to take a guard with the second pick, but darn it, if I hadn't seen anybody like Quentin Nelson before, it was the best run blocking offensive lineman I've ever evaluated, and I can get positional value. But every now and then, you get a unicorn that pops up.
You got to
recognize it for what it is. All right, you mentioned Penei Sewell there, Buck. Let's get to that one there. I have him. I know you have him as a top tackle. I have him as the number two tackle. 330 pounds, a big man. Mm-hmm. You know, length, you know, he's fine. It's a little bit on the lower end, but it's kind of in line with a lot of these offensive linemen this year, which is an interesting point. We used to have everybody get their arms measured at the combine. So it was all measured by the same guy, the same standard. And talking to some teams around the league, they're like, they're not putting quite as much stock into the arm length this year because – the Midwest scout that's doing it at one school versus the West Coast scout that's doing it at the other is not a uniform standard here.
No, it's not, because if you can't find that little notch in the shoulder, right, it changes. And those little inches matter when it comes to arm length. So I understand that, because without a combine, all of these things are different. Like, how much current value can you put into any of these numbers when it comes to 40 times and all that other stuff? Because surfaces are different, hand times are different than official laser times and all of this stuff. But in terms of Penei Sewell, you know, it's funny because he didn't play this year. And so there's a little out of sight, out of mind nature to him in the evaluation. But he is super light on his feet. He is a dancing bear. He really does a great job in the run game. He can climb and get those things. We talked to Mario Cristobal. He just raves about him. That's it. When I talk to some scouts on the West Coast, he's not the number one guy on the West Coast on some boards. And to me, I think people would be surprised to hear that, because there are some people that view Vera Tucker as a more higher upside, better player than Penei Sewell. And I don't think anyone would have thought that going into the season.
Do those people view Vera Tucker as a guard or as a tackle?
They think as a tackle, but they think that he has the insurance policy of being able to be a Pro Bowl caliber guard.
Because we're looking at him as the best guard, right?
Yeah, I think he'll be. Yeah. I think he'll end up being a Pro Bowl caliber, All Pro caliber guard is what he'll end up being. But I mean, I remember when I put it out. Gosh, maybe November. I don't know when it was. Somewhere around November, December, when I just kind of the offensive lineman I had watched, and I had said Rashawn Slater was my top offensive lineman, and just not having Penei Sewell in that top spot. I mean, the people lost their. minds on that. Like they could not understand it. And I'm like, I like Penei Sewell. I do. I think both those guys are, where are they on my list here? I've got Slater is my ninth player. Sewell is my 12th player, but I wouldn't hate it. Look, if the Bengals took Sewell with the fifth pick, he's a good player. I understand that. It's a little bit higher than I have him, but I get it. I wouldn't hate it. I just don't think, I don't know where you are, Buck, but when I stack up, and you can go, if you want to go, you know, for the generation, I just don't believe he's a generational player. Like people have talked about him like he's a generational player. And I've been around Jonathan Ogden. I've been around Joe Thomas. I've been around Jason Peters. He's not in that class for me. Not personally. But when I look at last year's class, I would take Mekhi Becton over him. I would take Wirfs over him. I'd take Wills over him. I think all three of those guys are better players. Go look at all the arm length, all the explosive numbers, the jumps, everything. Those guys are all more impressive than Penei Sewell and that stuff. So to me, when I hear generational player, I'm thinking I haven't seen anything like this dude. And I go back to last year, he'd be the fourth tackle for me.
Bucky, where do offensive line coaches stand on Penei Sewell from the aspect of still being like a real like moldable ball of clay? As a guy who's 20 years old, he's really played, you know, like one real full season, right? Mm-hmm. As a starter. So like, does that get them excited or does that make them like nervous?
I mean, I think they're all different because I think you have a faction of folks out there that love the teaching and developmental process of being able to take someone and help elevate their game by giving them some tools or straighten out some little things that allow them to be more consistent, particularly against elite competition. With Penei, I think he certainly offers a lot. And in the run game, he can mash, he can move people, he can play in either a zone or a power-based scheme and do those things. I think DJ's point, though, is important to remember. And I think sometimes we tend to forget it. Like when DJ talks about generational talents, and comparing guys in this year's class to those, that helps having a point of reference, having either evaluated or been on a team where you've seen a Hall of Fame caliber player, because you always compare that person to that. So DJ will talk about Jonathan Ogden. For me, I was in Seattle when Walter Jones was there. Yeah. And so it's hard for me to give out those big grades because I saw Walter Jones and Steve Hutchinson completely make a wall on the left side of the ball. And it was impenetrable. They dominated. We ran the ball left. Everyone knew the ball was going left and it didn't matter. And so like, that is the standard that we still have to use for the top five. And so, Penei Sewell wouldn't rank as the top guy in last year's class. He is a very, very good player, and I have him ranked as the top offensive tackle. But that grading process and historical grades, it certainly should matter when it comes to giving out that grade and talking about him when you have an opportunity to move off of him in favor of, let's say, like Kyle Pitts, who – you guys are saying is a generational talent. The value would be Kyle Pitts over him because you're talking about someone who we're saying is a gold jacket guy. Like that should be the standard when we're talking about those guys in the top five.
And then the last thing I'll say on Sewell is like, if not the Bengals, then where? Like you're looking maybe 10 to the Cowboys. You're looking outside the top 10 at that point.
Yeah, I think so. I think he gets on a grease pole a little bit and he gets down into that conversation. The Cowboys, the Giants, the Chargers. He's somewhere in that 10 to 15.
I mean, I mentioned, look, I have him as a 12th player, but if I'm the Chargers picking at 13 and he's, you know, gets to 10, 9, 10, I think, you know, I'm a Slater guy, but Slater could very well end up playing inside. The Chargers have that hole at left tackle. I would probably still lean towards Slater, but I wouldn't hate it at all if the Chargers were sitting at 13 and traded up to 9 or 10 and took Penei Sewell, let him protect his old buddy there in Justin Herbert. I think that's a smart move.
Man, I think it's a really smart move if he's there. And I think if you're the Chargers, you obviously know doing a lot of work and contributing there. It is all about, for me, protecting the king. We'll take a chess reference. The first thing that you learn in chess is it's all about protecting the king. And so if Justin Herbert is what we say is, and he's shown to be an elite level player, I'm going to make sure that he is protected so he can do what he does from the pocket and as a playmaker. And so if Penei Sewell is there, I mean, I think you run the card up.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't think he would get by them by any stretch. I'd be curious to see if they would try and go up and get him if he did start to drift a little bit. That's an interesting, it's interesting conversation. There's a lot of these kind of like inflection points in the draft, as we look at it. Anything else, Buck, from the pro day circuit that, that stood out to you? I thought one thing.
You mean other than this. Jamar Johnson of Indiana?
Oh yeah. We're going to devote a whole show to that next week. Okay. did you see the Rashad Bateman, he was listed at 210.
DJ,
which he said was wrong. He's 190 pounds. Like DJ, he was a really good player, but that's like I was like, whoa.
Well, it frustrated me, right? Because and here's the thing: when you don't get a chance to go on the road, and no one can get on the road, we couldn't go to real games and see him. And so when someone is listed in the media guide as 6'2", 210, and then you watch him play, the comparisons that I was making based on his game
same here.
Was like, hey, AJ Brown, Michael Thomas, this. Well, then when he shows up at 190 pounds and he runs like that, well, now the comparisons go from those beasts physically to now, oh, we're talking about like, I think next gen stats was Kenny Stills and Justin Jefferson and those things. That's a huge difference in terms of as we're building the basketball team.
Style of play.
Yeah. Like we now went from Fat Lever, the post up shooting guard, to now dude out there floating around like Alex Ingles. Like it's a completely different deal. And I know the young people won't know. They can be like, who's Fat Lever? Whatever. but that's what we did. Like we completely changed stylistically how we're building our basketball team on the perimeter just from those differences.
That's the year though. That's the year that we're in. And that's why, like when people say, I don't understand how you can have movement. The season ended. Like a couple things. I always laugh at that. A couple things. First of all, when the season ends, like college football, they play the national championship games. To make another dated reference, we don't go Gidget and like blink, and all of a sudden we've evaluated 400 players. Like we're not done. Like that, we're still getting through them, and then we go through and we put the base layer of paint on the wall, and then we got to go through and go back and do a little bit more. We do the neighborhood, you know, get him in the neighborhood, then in the right house. I like the church one, get him in the church. We got him, get him in the right pew, you know. But it's a long process, and it's especially difficult when you don't have any measurements, which we are now starting to get.
Okay, so I know, DJ, sometimes you have to mute my stuff on Twitter because I tend to get in these dust-ups with people. Commonly, so I got in a dust-up Friday with a recruiting analyst who took a shot about mock drafts, and I wrote a thing about Mac Jones not being a first-round talent.
I didn't see this.
So I wrote this thing about Mac Jones. I compared him to the Avengers. I said he's Iron Man, meaning that when I look at this quarterback class, I feel like all these other guys have superpowers, right? Mm-hmm. Justin Fields, Trey Lance, Zach Wilson, Trevor Lawrence, they all have these magical powers, either athleticism, arm talent, and those guys to make it happen. Mac Jones is Iron Man to me because all of his powers are the suit. You take the suit off, he doesn't have any superpowers. And so the suit to me has been the supporting cast of Alabama, whatever. And so I say, look, he's not a first round. He's not a first round talent. I wouldn't grade him as a first round talent. If we were working for a team, I couldn't give him a 7 or a higher grade. So someone was like, oh, your mock draft, you had him at 32. So you thought, I said, okay, for one.
No,
never judge my opinion on a mock draft. And I hated to like pull it behind the curtain. I said, look, man, mock drafts are for entertainment. I'm gonna be honest with you. Like they generate clicks and interest and all those other things. We can talk about scenarios, but if you want to know how I really feel, either read a report or look at how I ranked them top fives or whatever. Yeah. That's how I feel. And so I happened to do something that was very immature.
Oh no.
I went down that person's timeline.
No.
I happened to catch a thing where he had tweeted in October that Mac Jones in his mind was a third round pick. And so I was like, I didn't think he was a first rounder, and you didn't either. Yeah. And so then he was like,
oh boy. Oh boy.
So, but like, I mean, come on. Like it was funny. It was Friday. I was feeling frisky. I was like, well, let's have this conversation then.
So I feel like I've told you, I feel like I've coached you through this.
See, look, man, this is what happened. Cause I'm a recent convert to coffee. Right. So now I started drinking coffee. So I get caffeine in me. But anyway, the bigger point of the conversation, just so people understand, like when you talk about the variances and how people move up and down the board, typically, when we talk about making adjustments, we're making tweaks. We don't make wholesale changes from, oh, this guy's a fourth rounder. Now I'm going to give him a first round grade. Yeah. It is, look, here's the grade, but now let's get the order right as it relates to the rest of the people. Guys don't move up and down the board like that during this time of year. We'll do some of this stuff for TV purposes, right, where we have these things. But in real life, we don't change our grade dramatically based on some of the information that we get. And so it's just understanding the scouting process. And you're right, there are 400 guys to grade. We won't have everybody done at certain checkpoints of the year, but we certainly have them done by draft day. And I think it's just important to understand that. So that was a long story to get to that point.
That was good, man. Golly. Rhett, you're going to have to step in here. I've tried to be Bucky's Twitter life coach, and I've failed. I've completely failed.
It's on you. Definitely failed.
It's fun sometimes. It's fun to go back and forth.
I've been finding myself jumping into the fray a little bit on those who are the poo-pooing our mock draft our pro day coverage.
I said that on the air. So I can't say anything on that. I called that out on the air.
What'd you call out? What happened?
Well, the people are like, well, if you know, and what do we say, right? If pro days didn't matter, nobody would go.
Yeah.
That is true. No one will show up.
These are the dumbest things in the world. I'm like, they might be the dumbest things in the world, but the smartest coach in the history of football just flew 2,000 miles to be at this thing. So I'm going to go take his opinion over yours. I'm sorry. It does actually matter a little bit. Yeah. And then the other thing was people get in their feelings and all sad about the fact that Rhett and I were getting excited about, you know, some of these throwing displays.
I saw some particular somebody's make reference to those things. They might have even posted a video to kind of sub.
Hold on, Buck. Your boy Colin, by the way, over at Fox was talking a lot about how he's like, I can't remember a pro day. I'm like, I don't remember Andrew Luck's pro day.
I can tell you everything about it. In the rain, driving rain, in the wind, the last throw of the day, he turned around to throw into the wind. Yeah, it was very impressive. I was there. It was very impressive.
Right. Yeah. So I mentioned that. But anyway.
That's funny. But no, but the whole point. My whole point was this. Like, let's not live life as such a cynical, just in a dour state. Like, let's just, if you... Are you the same person that sits there and goes, this is the worst dunk contest. This guy can't play. He's a terrible defender. I mean, who cares? Who cares if he just put the ball?
His efficiency rate is not.
I roll emoji. I don't care, but this is so dumb. I'm like, dude, have a Coke and a smile. Put your feet up on the desk. Enjoy the dunk contest. That's all this is. We're not saying this guy's moving up the draft board or moving down.
Oh, goodness.
But a guy that throws the ball like Zach Wilson was, it's just fun to watch. It'd be fun to watch Steph Curry go shoot threes and warm-ups.
Fun to watch.
It's just take it for what it is. That, you know, we don't have to be so cynical and so, you know, we have to hate everything.
Mark McGwire and BP.
Smile, laugh, enjoy life a little bit. I'm telling you, it's a way better way to live.
It is a way better way to approach it. Let's be positive. We don't have to be so negative. No negative Nancy.
Everything's not so serious, okay? There's nobody, no life or death issues here. We're just watching a guy roll left and throw right. It's fun. So we're allowed to do that. All right. Anything else you guys want to add before we jump out of here?
I think that was some spirited convo.
But look, let's button it back up because we started with basketball. So let's finish with basketball. Let's talk a little bit about Jalen Suggs hitting the shot. Not only about him hitting the shot, but the fact that he was a very decorated and accomplished multi-sport athlete. I mean, this is a guy who was, I think he was state player of the year in football and basketball in Minnesota, a 4-star recruit as a football player and a 5-star in basketball. Like, what do we think about the multi-sport thing and how does it relate to, like, what we're going to be talking about over the next month, getting ready for the draft, particularly with some of these quarterbacks?
My first thought was, you know, they do the 360 series, which is we're going to have episodes coming up here shortly. This year we're doing Lawrence, Fields, Wilson. But when we do that, we go back and we talk to all these coaches. You know, we did it with, you know, Herbert last year. You talked to his basketball coach. We've done it this year with these guys. And we've learned a lot about just, you know, majority of these guys have all played multiple sports. And we see it with Suggs being this phenomenal basketball player at Gonzaga. And he was a, you know, big time quarterback recruit offered by everybody in the country. But you know what got me thinking? And wasn't it, I think it was Haskins, right? where I remember Urban Meyer said
he's the best 707
spandex quarterback because he was just playing football year round. And I thought, you know what? That is interesting, man. Like, it's to me the kind of the what do we call that specialization that we're kind of into now. It's not good. I mean, this is a great Suggs is another example of that. Like, he's done okay. It didn't hurt his basketball career that he was playing football.
And Bucky, didn't your interview with John Beck, didn't John talk about how Justin Fields how they benefited from his baseball background a little bit?
Absolutely. So here's the thing. Not only that, I think the conversations and getting ready to put together the 360, which you guys have to check out, not only Justin Fields, but Zach Wilson. So Justin Fields' background is in baseball. And, man, look, I think he played in the middle of the infield or maybe there. And we talked to David Cutcliffe, where David Cutcliffe talked about he wanted quarterbacks in middle. He called it middle fielder hands, meaning when you play shortstop and second base, you always have to be able to make these transactions in terms of turning to and scooping and flipping and all this other stuff. So it allows you to do a bunch of different things without looking at the ball hitting your hands. And then Zach Wilson, being an accomplished basketball player, we've talked to Clay Helton and others about, I mean, Pete Carroll has always talked about basketball and vision and being able to see it and being able to process and do all those things. And so I don't think it is a coincidence that when we look at the top quarterbacks in the National Football League, that they have other sports as part of their background. Pat Mahomes, Russell Wilson being baseball players, some of the other guys being big time players in other sports. I think it matters. And I would like a quarterback that has done more than just play 707 quarterback his entire upbringing.
Well, I think it's important, man. I think it is good. And, you know, Wilson was a really good basketball player. So we talked to his basketball coach for this upcoming 360. Right. You guys will enjoy that. Ironically, I think Trevor only played football. I think he played some soccer background growing up.
He did. Yeah. But when we talked to his parents talked about how he did other things growing up and he was great at it. So, yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing. Being able to be exposed to so many different things, not only different techniques and how it impacts different parts of your body, and you develop different levels of athleticism, but different coaching, just expanding your horizons beyond just football. I think it matters.
By the way, last thing, because we've gone full circle, we've gone a little bit longer than we were planning on. But I go to my first Padre game in over a year. It was last Friday night. You go to the game. So I've got a buddy in the personnel department. So I was texting him and just, hey, you know, excited to be back in the ball yard. So he comes and grabs me in the seventh inning and takes me up to the general manager's booth up there with AJ Preller. And so I sat up there with AJ Preller for about an inning and a half. And he's a big New York Giants fan. So we were talking about the draft. And then we started talking about quarterbacks. And we're talking about Tatis and his athleticism and what you look for middle infielders based off kind of what Bucky was just talking about, how we're talking about how important the quick hands are. And he was, you know, I was learning, you know, I was kind of selfish. It's great. I'm a big Padre fan to be up there with him talking about their team. But one of the things he said for a shortstop was, even more important than your athleticism and your arm is your body control. And he was talking all about how guys almost can be too fast at shortstop because you want to be a little bit more under control, always on balance. And I thought, you know what, that's a good quarterback takeaway too. From the, you know, we've heard the football guys use the baseball comparison. Here's the baseball guy. And I'm like, oh, you know what? That is something about always being able to be kind of under control and control your body. That was interesting.
Yeah,
it is interesting. DJ, I think this is funny, right? Because we are football scouts and we have friendships with those who are in other sports. But I think at the end of the day, I think scouts can be dropped in any arena and they can evaluate talent, because I think there's a lot of cross referencing when it comes to, when it comes to look what you're looking for. And you talk about body control and athleticism, particularly in the middle infield and doing those things, how it relates there. I'll talk about looking at DBs and how the first thing I do is I go to their background, their bio, and I'm looking for guys that have played baseball because of depth perception and being able to judge the ball and doing those things. Because I told you I've always wanted safeties that have played baseball because I know not only from a range standpoint, but being able to judge the ball. I just find it interesting how everything is so intertwined, even though we live in these different worlds when it comes to evaluating.
All right. Well, this was a fun episode. Rhett, we appreciate you hopping back on, man. Yeah. It's great to be with you.
See you guys next Monday.
Yeah, we'll be back with Path. Path every day, 6 Eastern, I believe, correct?
That's right.
6 Eastern.
That is correct.
You can find it on NFL Network. Rhett does a wonderful job hosting the show. Bucky, myself, whole host of characters. Mm-hmm. I actually do like Rhett. He does a good job.
Oh, that's nice.
Buck, last story, then we'll leave. But just to brag on Rhett for a second. So we're at one of these pro days. Oh, it's the big pro day where the trades happened.
Yeah.
So
he's got Zach Wilson on one TV, right? The Niners trade happens. So they trade up. So we're talking about the Niners trade. He's watching the monitor with Zach Wilson, you know, so kind of juggling those two things. I got my computer open and I see the Eagles website tweet that they have just traded with to go back from 6 to 12. So he's got one trade, Zach Wilson, and I'm on my laptop seeing another trade. So while he's talking, I turn my laptop, you know, you're all the way across the table because of social distancing. I slide my laptop across the table so he can read it, that it's the verified Philadelphia Eagles account saying this trade. And son of a gun never stuttered or anything. And he just kind of he swallowed all that information. And then, boom, he announces that trade on the air. It was really impressive. Wow. I give him fun of Rhett, but that was impressive.
How many years in the business, Rhett?
We're up to like 15 years in business now. 15, the big 15.
Yeah, 15 years in business. Okay, so let me take you guys behind the curtain. So I'm watching the pro day coverage of you guys on the screen.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have just about completed the notebook. And I am doing Who is Zach Wilson is my header for the notebook. So I'm about 4 paragraphs in. I am just waiting for the conclusion of the pro day workout to cap it off. That trade comes down. The trade comes down. I get a call from NFL media like, hey, new how direction, close are you to being finished? Like, we want to talk about the Niners. And I said, yeah, but I got all this stuff on Zach Wilson and he's this and he's that. And I got the pro day. Yeah, but the trade. And
the three do that.
So I'm typing, listening to you guys, searching the terms of the deal. You guys are talking about the deal. DJ is talking about the Eagles vantage point or whatever. And I'm sitting here like, oh man, here we go. So it is the nuttiest Friday that I've been around, because I'm like,
that was crazy. Man,
all of this work and I got to do it all over. So I get it. Gosh. I appreciate it.
That's two professionals right there. Nicely done. Yeah. All right. Again, you can catch us all on Path to the Draft, 6 p.m. Eastern on NFL Network. Again, appreciate you guys subscribing to the pod. And we got you covered here. Lots of good stuff coming your way here as we march towards the NFL Draft. He's Bucky Brooks. He's Rhett Lewis. I'm Daniel Jeremiah. We'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to NFL.com/podcasts.